I'm talking with Peter Larangis tonight about his book, The Viper's Nest. It is the seventh book in the series, The 39 Clues, which has been on several bestseller lists. And we'll also find out how this is a multimedia event, not just a book, but a multimedia adventure for children 8 to 12 years old. Peter, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
For folks who might be coming in the middle, if you would, tell us how this all started, and it actually starts with Grace Cahill. So what did she set in motion?
Grace Cahill set in motion an incredible worldwide adventure that involves finding 39 clues leading to the greatest power ever known to humankind. Now, we understand that Grace really wants her two grandchildren, Dan and Amy Cahill, who are 14 and 11 years old, to find this. We don't know for sure, but we have a feeling. And Dan and Amy show up at the reading of her will, and lo and behold, there are hundreds of other people. They don't know who they are, but what they find out is that all of those people are involved in this search for the clue, and some of them have gotten a head start, and some of them are completely ruthless. They belong to four different branches of the family. Dan and Amy don't know which branch they belong to, but they know that they have to go all over the world in order to find clues left by some of their ancestors. And it turns out that the Cahill family is actually a secret family that includes people such as Mozart, Benjamin Franklin, Einstein, Madame Curie, Amelia Earhart, Napoleon. These people have all been secretly Cahills.
And so in The Viper's Nest, where in the world are Amy and Dan, and what's going on in their life?
In The Viper's Nest, they actually travel to South Africa for the first time, and we get there in a roundabout way from a clue that they picked up in the previous book. And when in South Africa, they find a clue that's been left by some previous Cahills, including Winston Churchill, who was imprisoned in Pretoria for a time. And also they become involved in the history of the Zulu tribe. And the great uniter of the Zulu tribe, very controversial leader named Shaka Zulu. In doing so, they find a secret Tomas stronghold, Tomas being one of the branches of the 39 clues. All I can tell you is that it's a really crazy, dangerous adventure in finding out this particular clue of the series. The other thing that we get to in the seventh book of the 39 clues is finding out for the first time which branch of the family they actually belong to, one of the great mysteries of the series so far.
And there are lots of cliffhangers, so if you would, read us one of them.
Oh, sure. I think I'm going to read a part of the book where Dan really wants to read a clue that he thinks has been left inside an abandoned, almost collapsing mine in South Africa. And he's managed to get himself alone with his au pair, Nellie Gomez, his babysitter, who's actually 21 years old. And she's basically been the key to getting Dan and Amy to these different places around the world. And in this segment, they're kind of colluding. They're the only ones that know. They've gotten his sister Amy off somewhere else, and they're alone by this mine, and she's letting him do it. "What do you see?" Nellie hissed. "Hold tight," Dan said. The rock walls were rough and pocked, and a jagged crack ran down the opposite side. Dan thought he could spot some writing, but it was just the accumulation of gravelly dirt on a narrow ledge. "I hear something," Nellie said. "Make it fast." Nada. Dan exhaled. It was too dark, too much pressure. "Beam me up, Scotty," he said. The words caught in his mouth. His flashlight was angled inward now, shining on the wall just below him, and there, carefully carved into the rock, about 4 feet directly underneath him, were several lines of writing. "Wait, I got it," Dan cried. "Lower me a little. I see something." Nellie inched forward. Dan sank lower into the shaft. Pebbles shook loose from the rim and rained downward into the hole, into silence. Dan never heard them reach bottom. Dan squinted, reaching down with the flashlight to the writing on the wall. It was too hard to read. A rubbing! That would do the trick. "Pull me up," Dan said. In a moment, Dan was over the edge of the hole. "Okay, Nellie, I need to go back down, this time with a sheet of paper and pencil. There's writing down there, and I can get it by rubbing it." "Now I know you're crazy," she said. "Checkmate!" Amy's voice echoed from the hut, followed by a laugh from the old man and a playful moan from Kurt, her chess partner. "We have a few minutes," Dan said. "He's going to ask for a rematch." "How do you know?" Nellie said. "It's a guy thing." Nellie sighed. Rummaging around in Dan's pack, she pulled out a pencil and notebook, ripping out a sheet. "Okay, but be quick." Maneuvering the light, the pencil, and the paper wasn't going to be easy. "I'll need spares," he said, "in case I drop something." With a look of exasperation, Nellie tore off more sheets and found two other pencils. Dan stuffed them into his pants pocket and held on to the originals. Clasping a flashlight in his mouth, he said, "Okay, let's go." Dan stretched out on his stomach at the hole's edge. He felt a shudder and heard the sound of pebbles slipping down the wall beneath him. He moved left until he gripped what felt like solid rock. "Here," Dan said, inching over the edge. "Just a minute, dude. You have something sticky in your pack," Nellie said. "I'm getting it off my..." Suddenly, the ground beneath Dan fell in an explosion of black soil. He felt himself drop abruptly, and then he was hurtling down into the darkness, his mouth open in a silent scream.
And there the chapter ends. One of the things I appreciated about this book is that you seamlessly weave in history. You alluded to several figures in history and also geography, but there are also these decoding episodes.
Right. There are a lot of secret codes, especially in this book 7. That's one of the things that I really love to do is dreaming up secret codes. So we find about 2 or 3 of them in the book. So the kids actually can try to anticipate the mystery by unraveling some of these codes. And, you know, you're right. I mean, we involve Winston Churchill in this case and Shaka Zulu. And in every book, we have important historical figures.
Tell us about the multimedia aspects of this project.
One of the things that we wanted to do from the get-go was to kind of make an immersive experience for kids, which meant really trying to figure out why readership among kids has been going down, because it has been, and going to the place where we think the cause was. So by going to the place where gamers are, where kids who love to be on the web are, we wanted to create this incredibly immersive environment that involved all the elements of the books and actually allowed kids to find some of the clues themselves and actually maybe learn a little something in the process. I mean, the trick was to make the online experience be incredibly attractive, but you really can't understand it unless you follow the story. So the idea was to actually bring kids from that place into the world of print, into the world of reading. And, you know, we found that in many cases, in so many cases, it's worked really nicely. I have heard tons of parents, you know, say to me, you know, my kid never liked reading until the 39 clues. So it's been very gratifying.
One of the things that is curious to me is that this is the 7th book. You've written one of the earlier books in the series.
Right.
But there are other authors also. So talk about this, what I envision as sort of a tag team writing approach.
Right. It's kind of like the old relay with Apollo Ono pushing off on the other skater. I mean, from the very beginning, the book started with Rick Riordan writing the first book. And Rick is one of the most popular heavyweights in the children's book business. You know, I mean, it would have been great for Rick to write all the books. But the idea was to bring the books out every 3 or 4 months. And nobody could possibly do that without a head start. So Scholastic came up with this brilliant idea of creating kind of an all-star, you know, children's writing team. Had never been done before. None of us knew. We were all kind of jumping into the void, into the abandoned mine of writing. We all jumped on at the opportunity to work with one another. It's interesting because we don't really talk to one another. We realized early on it was a little bit like, if you can imagine, you know, the jets coming into an airport, you know, 6 jets, pilots, do they call one another and say, hey, you want to go first? No, after you. I mean, obviously, no, they clear it with the air traffic controller. And in a sense, our editor became kind of our air traffic controller. So if we wanted to make changes or we had suggestions or we were going to take the book in a different direction than our original plan was, because there was a sort of general plan about the series, very kind of loose but general, everyone had to know if there was the slightest change. And the way to do it would be to clear it through the editor so that she could then know everything that was being done and then disseminate it among all the rest of the writers.
And tonight we're going to close with a reading from The Viper's Nest by Peter Laurentius.
Let me set the table a little bit by introducing my favorite adult character, Alistair O. Alistair is the unreliable uncle. He seems like he's your best friend, but I call him in this book the whack-a-mole of reliability. He betrays you at a moment's notice, and you just don't know whether or not he's on your side. In this part of the book, in The Viper's Nest, Alistair's life is in danger, and if Dan and Amy swoop in to save him, they will risk their own life, and they have to make this decision along with their au pair, Nellie. Nellie was in the car now. She turned the engine over once, twice, three times, and it finally started.
You're not going to leave me here, are you?
Alistair was looking at Amy now. His face registered shock, panic. It was an expression Amy recognized from the fire two nights before.
He was willing to save our lives, she thought. He was about to jump off a ledge for us until Irina arrived.
But she also knew the look from another time, from 7 years ago, when Alistair had come to their house to steal a poem. A poem with a clue hidden in it. A poem that Hope Cahill and Arthur Trent, her parents, thought would solve the riddle of the 39 clues.
We only want what is ours!
Someone had said that during the night. Amy had heard the voice from the study just after the commotion had wakened her.
Alistair's voice.
Now, Alistair hadn't set the fire.
But he could have said something. He could have prevented...
Amy, Alistair said, are you all right, dear?
Amy looked him in the eye.
Why did you keep it from them? The fact that you'd stolen the poem.
This is hardly the time, Alistair stammered.
You could have told them, Amy said. You could have shouted, I have the poem. She was running into a fire, Uncle Alistair.
Oh, I was contending with so many people, Alistair said. I could barely see straight. Eisenhower Holt had some cockamamie idea that we could use the neighbor's garden hose.
Eisenhower Holt was there, too, Amy said.
And his wife, Mary Todd, Alistair said.
Dan's face was red.
How many people were there, just standing around, doing nothing to help them?
Eisenhower. Yes, Amy saw him now in her memory of the night, a gruff man with a red face and bristles for hair. They were all in it together, united. They may not all have set the fire, but without them it wouldn't have happened. They were killers, all of them. Tears rushed to her eyes, but Amy kept them back. Without thinking, she grabbed Uncle Alistair's silk scarf and pulled him toward her.
I don't care if you're working with them or not, she said.
Either way, when they find you, they will make your life miserable.
She let go and jumped into the back seat next to Dan. Nellie gunned the engine.
Wait! You can't!
Alistair sputtered, struggling with something at the top of his cane.
Oh? Nellie said, stepping on the gas.
Watch me.
It's delightful to be with you tonight,
Peter.
Oh,
thanks for having me. It's been fun.
I've been talking with Peter Larangis. He is the author of the latest 39 Clues book. It is titled The Viper's Nest, and you'll find more information at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.